So why does the poet begin the book of Genesis the way he does? And why does Matthew conclude his gospel the way he does? The answer has to do with choices. The choices that each of us is called to make. To help open up this whole topic, these scriptures about choices, I've got a little story for you. This last Thursday, I got to go on a hike with Torah and her first grade class. 20 little first graders went on a mile-long hike on the Appalachian Trail in Dalton. And there was another teacher along, and I was there as sort of filling in for a parent. And the kids were obviously very excited. They were obviously feeling like this is going to be fun. This was a very different kind of field trip. You can start from Craneville School and hike a mile and be deep in the woods, which is exactly what they did. And if you can imagine, 20 little first graders, 6 and 7 year olds, all their bubbling energy, getting out of the building, out on the sidewalk, and then into the woods, they're ready to go every which direction. And Tor and the other teacher were just calmly calling them back to the trail again and again and again. And the trail led them blaze by blaze, as the kids noticed each blaze as they went along, until they came to a huge boulder deep in the woods, which is where they were going to have lunch. And as they stood there at the foot of the boulder, Tora put out her arms and calmly said, because they were all ready to race up the boulder, she put out her arms and calmly said, everybody's going to get a chance to sit on the boulder, but we're going to do it safely, we're going to do it with an orderly way, we're going to take turns, a few will go at a time, you're not to go to the top of the boulder, you're to sit this little ledge where there's a tree growing right out of the boulder. She explained all that, had her arms out, and as soon as she stopped talking, two little ones just ducked under her arm and raced right up the boulder. And I could just standing there, just could see them going right off the top and into the woods. And as they're starting up the boulder, Tora and the other teacher spoke with authority, like out of the Gospel of Matthew, all the authority of Jesus. And the two little ones just stopped dead in their tracks. And it was like watching two people just verbally stretch out their arms 10 feet and grab each of them by the scruff of their neck and plop them down next to them, and then which they actually did come right down. And then she said, you go to the end of the line, you're going to wait, you're going to go last now. I was so impressed watching a teacher in action, having this voice that commands authority and gets these little ones to do what they're supposed to do. I was amazed even more at the wonder on these children's faces as they're hiking through the woods, looking at everything and just being absolutely amazed and filled with wonder. And then how still 20 first graders could get sitting on the ground with their nature journals, just looking all around. One of them found a salamander, which was a great event. They all had to pool together and see the little orange-colored salamander. And others found this and that. And so they had these moments of absolute stillness, and then there would be this surge of energy because they'd found something. Back and forth it went. And then when we walked back the mile, I was so impressed with how tired they all were and how these little first graders have a way of falling down. They would just stumble and fall. If I did that, I'd break something. But they just kept falling down. But they were fine. They were just exhausted. But the thing that really struck me, leaving that and thinking about this sermon, was that human impulse. That human impulse to throw caution to the wind, to ignore wisdom, and to race forward right under the arms of the teacher just to see what'll happen. And it's clearly the vital task of teachers to help our young ones experience the miracles of this world, to experience the expanding miracle of the human mind and all the things that it can do, and also to teach children self-control, to be wise, to make choices that lead to good things and not to chaos and not to trouble. So I'd like to take those thoughts and apply them to our adult world for a couple of moments and think about global climate change. The Arctic at the moment is warming twice as fast as the rest of the globe, which is well documented, and they can figure it out because of all the different weather patterns, explain why that's happening, but it clearly is happening. And so the ice up there is melting very, very fast, and nations and corporations and even vacation cruise people are now planning for an ice-free Arctic, which is happening more and more frequently. The ice sheets at the other end of the world, in Antarctica, are beginning to fall apart. Larsen Ice Sheet A is already gone, Larsen Ice Sheet B is gone, and now Larsen Ice Sheet C, which is the size of the state of Delaware, is anticipated to break off and float off into the ocean sometime maybe later this month. Coral reefs are dying because of warming oceans. Island nations and shorelines are losing ground steadily because of warming oceans and rising sea levels. But there are all these powerful interests, powerful people, who basically keep saying, well, you haven't proved it yet. What if those 90, 95% of scientists are wrong? What if all these trends change? What does science know anyway? Wouldn't it be great to be able to sail through the Arctic and over the North Pole on a cruise ship? That would be so much fun. Who cares about Antarctica? It's a long way away. We've all heard those voices or those kinds of voices from very prominent places and in the media. And it just makes me think, it's as if there is a teacher standing before a giant boulder saying to humanity, slow down, stop, think, make wise choices, don't be so impulsive, don't be so stupid that humanity and all of creation is harmed irrevocably. And right in mid-sentence, this human impulse, this human nature impulse that kicks in, and humanity says, no, we're going to do what we want to do. We want oil, we want coal, we want gas. Don't change. We don't want to change. We don't want to have to make adaptations to a more complicated world. The boulder is money. And so they race under the arms of the teacher to do what human beings too often do. And because the decision makers are often rich, powerful, well-connected people, there's no simple way to stop them. There's no first grade teacher who can just say, stop, and pull them by the scruff of the neck and change things. So what do we do? How do we respond to a reality where we're all being dragged to a place most of us don't want to go? We can try denial and ignore it and just hope it goes away. We can join in and just say, well, let's just go to the Arctic on a cruise ship. But here's another option. In the 6th century BC, the Jewish people were dragged from their homes, taken in exile to Babylon, a place they did not want to be, but they were taken by powerful people who could not be stopped. And it was there and then that this magnificent poet wrote the beginning of Genesis, and basically through the poem and other words said to the people, you do have power. You do have power. Slowly and steadily, you can change this world that you're in. Every week, as you listen for God, listen to your hearts, notice the miracle of the world, and sanctify the Sabbath. Make every week a holy time in your life. Taking time to remember deeper truths, that deep voice of love, at the heart of creation, at work, even in this chaotic, disordered world, as you do that, then you will know what to do. You will know how to respond. There's no simple answer. There's no script that you can follow. You have to listen and then be willing to respond. That's what that poem is all about. And the thing to notice is the Jewish people are still here, 2,500-600 years later. The Babylonian Empire, that was so incredibly strong for a short spell, has been gone a very long time. There are deeper powers at work in this world that when we tap into them, called the love of God, things do change slowly and steadily. In the first century AD, the disciples were forsaken, were abandoned because Jesus was killed and then rose and ascended. They were left with a world filled with chaos of the Roman Empire. But in the middle of that, the risen Christ came to the disciples in Galilee and spoke to the core of their being, spoke to the very identity of the church, to what it meant to be a human being, and said to them, go out into the world. And Jesus didn't commission them to go out and go make this the biggest, baddest religion in the world, make everybody a Christian, convert them all or kill them otherwise. That got interpreted that way for a time, but that's not what Jesus was about. He's saying, go out into the world and help people listen and to follow this deep wisdom that's within each of us. And to be disciples of Jesus, of life, of love, of God who continues to create. And if you will do that, I will be with you always, even to the end of the age. And in that spirit, the early church knew and discovered how to respond, what to do. And again, take note, the church is still here, doing its work of trying to remember how to listen. The Roman Empire, as powerful as it was, has been gone a very long time. Deeper powers at work when we listen. And so in our time of chaos and disorder, of many threats, of many bad choices being made, of us feeling like we're being dragged where we don't want to go, there is this teacher beckoning to us, calling us to listen for God, to listen to the miracle of the world, to listen to the warnings of Mother Nature. Listen for the warnings of Mother Nature. And each week, remember to take time to sanctify this day, this life, this week, which means to wake up to deeper truths, deeper love, to hear the call to be a disciple and to follow the trail, to choose wisely, and then we'll know what to do individually and together to slowly and steadily change our crazy world once again. And as we do that, the pattern holds, the world will shift. So, it all boils down to this. May we follow Jesus. Amen.